Before we begin, let's take a moment and generate our motivation. And so let's begin by rejoicing that we have a precious human life, that we're healthy, that we live in a place where Buddhism exists, where we can meet Buddhist teachers, where there's other people who are interested in the Dharma, who support us in our practice. Let's rejoice that we live in a place that's peaceful, where we have enough to eat. And let's also rejoice at our interest in the Dharma. The fact that we're thoughtful people who care about spiritual matters. And so feeling happy with our situation, let's make a strong determination to use it wisely so that we can progress along the path to full enlightenment. And so let's generate the wish to make our lives meaningful for ourselves and for each and every other sentient being, and thereby generate the aspiration to attain full enlightenment, so that we'll have the wisdom, compassion, and power to be able to really contribute to the welfare of all living beings and lead them to enlightenment. So generate that intention, that motivation right now. And then open your eyes and come out of your meditation. Okay. So I, at the beginning, just want to thank the people who made these teachings possible, because I know a lot of people have been spending a lot of time organizing the teachings and preparing everything for us. So all the people at Pure Land Marketing, at Taipei Buddhist Center, and all the other helpers who are friends of Srivasti Abbey, and to thank all of you for making this teaching possible so that everybody else can come in and enjoy. And then to say that it's good to see so many familiar faces here, and also some new faces. So some of you have heard the chapter one of the teaching, and some of you haven't. So I just want to do a little bit of a review to fill in the people who haven't heard. Because the idea with this series of teachings would be that instead of having, you know, a random talk here and a random talk there, is each time that I come to do one chapter out of this book. So it's a guide to a bodhisattva's way of life. And in that way you would get a complete teaching of a very precious text. So the author of this text is Shantideva. He's one of the great 8th century Indian sages and practitioners. He was an extremely humble practitioner, and nobody knew of his great qualities because he kept them all very hidden. Okay, he wasn't like us. You know, we have one small quality and we advertise it to the world. We want everybody to know how marvelous we are. But Shantideva had many, many great qualities, and he kept them very secret, very hidden. And he kept them so hidden that the people in his monastery thought that he only did three things, and they gave him a nickname, you know, the person who did three things. So what were the three things? He ate, he slept, and he went to the toilet. Okay, so that's all they thought that Shantideva knew. They thought, you know, he was so humble that they thought that he didn't know anything about the Dharma and was completely ignorant. So they arranged, they wanted to like get him out of the monastery, but they couldn't, you know, you can't just kick somebody out of the monastery. So they wanted to make a fool out of him. So they asked him to give a big public teaching because they thought, oh, he's so foolish. He only does three things. He'll just look ridiculous and then he'll leave. But so they prepared one big, huge throne for him to sit on. And they didn't put any steps to get up to it, you know, so that they thought that'll start it out, okay? But he got there, and because he was such a highly realized practitioner with psychic powers, he put his hand on the throne, pushed the throne down, sat on it, and then it went back up again. And then he proceeded to give this teaching. And he just talked extemporaneously. He just talked really from his heart, giving this teaching. So it wasn't a prearranged script. You know, he didn't have it all written out like a university professor presenting it at a conference. He just talked from his heart about how to practice. And the audience was riveted. They couldn't believe that this person who they thought was an idiot could speak such powerful Dharma. And when he got to chapter 9, which is the chapter about the wisdom realizing the nature of reality, which is the emptiness of inherent existence, then he flew up into the sky and he vanished. But they could still hear his voice teaching the rest of the chapter. So he did leave the monastery after that, but not for the reasons that the people wanted him to leave. He went off to go and practice some more. And I received the transmission of this text several times. The first teachings I had on it were from Geshe Zopa, and then I've received it many times from His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And it's quite a precious text. Everything you need to know to become a Buddha is in this book. Okay. So we'll go through it and we'll learn. The first chapter, what we covered in April when I was here, was about the benefits of bodhicitta. So bodhicitta is, and you'll hear this word used very often as I speak, bodhicitta is the mind, a primary mind that has two intentions. One intention is to work for the benefit of all sentient beings. Okay? And the other intention is to become a fully enlightened Buddha in order to work for the benefit of all sentient beings. Okay? So this bodhicitta mind, okay, bodhi means awakening and citta means mind. So this awakening mind is the motivation that takes us to full enlightenment. So it's the intention that was generated by all the previous Buddhas, by all the present Buddhas, and will be generated by all the future Buddhas. Okay, you cannot become a Buddha without this motivation to work for the benefit of sentient beings and thereby to improve all of our capabilities and become a Buddha ourselves. This bodhicitta mind is also the source of all happiness. So it's not only the mind that takes us to enlightenment, where there's definitely no more suffering, but even while we're on the path, it's the cause of our happiness. Okay? And I can say from my own personal experience, although I have not realized bodhicitta, but just by doing the meditations that help us to generate bodhicitta, just by doing that, I can say that I've seen a huge change in my mind. When I was younger, I used to have a lot of problem with depression. I used to say, what's the meaning of life? There's no meaning to life. All you do is, you know, get a job and make a lot of money and get married and have kids and die, and there's no meaning to life. And I felt very discouraged and depressed about this. And the bodhicitta completely turned that around, because it gives you a very, very strong meaning and purpose to your life, okay? Because your life no longer is about, you know, just making money and having friends and having a good time. But now your life has some really special purpose, because you're training to be able to benefit all living beings. And not just benefit all living beings by giving them food or clothing or things like that, but benefiting them by leading them to full enlightenment, where they're never going to have any suffering whatsoever ever again. Okay, so bodhicitta doesn't just take us to, you know, feeling good and happy right now, but it takes us to a state of actual security, you know, where we're never going to experience misery again. Okay. And people are always looking for security. You know, we're trying so hard to be secure. You know, you need your savings fund, and you need your, what's the housing fund in Singapore that you have? I forget the name. It has three letters. CPF? Okay, that one. Okay, so you think that, you know, you just have to get your CPF, then you have real security, right? Okay, and you have your bank account, your stock, and you build them up. Then you have real security, huh? Yeah. Does that bring you real security? Even if you have hundreds and millions of zillions of dollars, do you ever feel secure? 100% secure? No. Okay? Because the very nature of cyclic existence, the state that we live in, is the nature of it is insecurity. Because everything's changing all the time. Yeah. No matter how much money you have, there's always inflation, and then it's not worth as much as it was when you got it. Okay? And no matter how many insurance policies you have, they can't prevent you from getting sick, because the very nature of having this kind of body is that it gets old and sick and dies. Okay? So we run around trying to make ourselves secure, but we never reach real security. Okay? And every time we have a problem, we go into crisis. You know, we have the initial problem, and then we go, I have a problem. What am I going to do? Oh, you know, and we get so upset, and then we talk to our friends and we tell our friends our problem on and on and on and on and on and on and on. You know, and our friend is going, oh my God, this is so boring. I love this person, but they tell me their problem every time I see them. But for us, our problem is so interesting, isn't it? We could talk about our problem over and over and over again, because we think our problem is the worst problem in the entire universe. Yeah. Why? Because it's my problem. Yeah, and that makes it the worst thing. Why? Because I'm the center of the universe, you know, and everything should be the way I want it to be. And if it's not, well, something's really wrong. Okay, so we get all bent out of shape because everything doesn't happen the way we want it. And then we compound our problem by feeling sorry for ourselves. Okay. Some of you may know that I do work with prison inmates in the U.S. I write to them, I go in and teach Buddhism in prison. And one of the inmates coined the phrase, a pity party. Okay? You know self-pity? Yeah? So we throw ourselves a pity party where we just feel sorry for ourselves. Okay? So we're the chief, we're the guest of honor at the party. Okay? And it revolves completely around us. And everybody's supposed to feel sorry for us. And of course, all of our friends get bored, which shows how stupid they are, you know, because our problem is so interesting. So we just throw our pity party alone and feel sorry for ourselves and go around and around and around saying, poor me, poor me, poor me, poor me. Okay, that's our mantra. Yeah. Om Mani Padme Hum goes out the window. And instead we take out our prayer beads. Poor me, poor me, poor me. Don't we? Yeah. And we have our little pity party. We do our mantra. And nothing changes, does it? Well, actually something changes. We usually feel worse. Yeah, because whenever we feel sorry for ourselves, we make our misery more intense. Because first there was the initial problem, and then we have the problem of getting depressed about the problem. And then we have the problem of getting angry because we've gotten depressed about the problem. Okay, and then we get discouraged because we've gotten angry because we've gotten depressed about the problem. Okay, so do you see what's going on? Everything is just circling around me. Okay, it's all about me. I got a request from, you know, I get these emails sometimes of people wanting to reprint material that I've written. So a couple of months ago, I got a request from a magazine. The name of the magazine is Me. Okay? And their purpose is to teach you that it's all about you. Because, you know, before I gave them my permission, I have to look and see what the magazine is about. So that's the byline, you know. It's all about you. It's all about me. And that's their purpose. And I wrote them a letter and I said, you can use my material, but I really disagree with what you're saying. Because in my whole life, my training as a Buddhist is to overcome the thought that it's all about me. Because that thought that it's all about me leads us to so much suffering and so much misery. And yet, this is what our 21st century society is teaching us. Yeah? And this is what the advertising industry is really encouraging us to believe, because you sell more things if you tell everybody it's all about me. I mean, even on the ride here, it was only, I don't know, 10, 15 minute ride to get here. I saw a bus, an SPB bus, on the side, you know, it was saying, it was encouraging people to speak better English. Yeah, have you seen that bus? Yeah? And what do they have written on the side of it? This is mine. Yeah? That's one of the first things we learn to say when we're 2 years old, isn't it? All of those of you who are parents who have had two-year-old kids. What's the first thing that a two-year-old learns? You know, they learn mommy and daddy, and then they learn mine. Okay. And so here it is, right on the side of the bus, teaching us, this is mine. Okay. And we get this message again and again and again. that it's all about me, because the advertising industry thinks that it's going to sell more stuff if it convinces us that it's all about us. So therefore, we can buy everything we want. We can consume everything we want. We can have everything we want. So we get this mentality, you know, of the whole world should revolve around me. And the more we think like that, the more miserable we are. Okay? You'd think that the more we thought about ourselves and tried to be happy, the happier we would be. But actually, it's just the opposite. Okay? The more we're focused on ourselves, the more miserable we are. Why? Because we become so super sensitive about every teeny weeny thing that has to do with me. Okay? Everything that has to do with me becomes blown up out of proportion, and so we become miserable. Yeah? We go into work and somebody doesn't say hello in the morning. Oh, we're so offended. My colleague didn't say hello. I don't know what's wrong. You know, something must be very wrong with him that he didn't say hello. Or maybe something's wrong with me. Oh, no, maybe something's wrong with me. Oh, I don't know. And then we get all worried. You know, maybe our colleague didn't feel well and that's why they didn't say good morning. Or maybe they were in the middle of finishing something and they didn't say good morning. But we make it into this whole big personal trip, you know, and then we worry about the relationship. So you see how thinking about ourselves makes us miserable? When that self-centered attitude is so strong, we invent problems that aren't even there. Okay. We completely create problems. Why are we nervous? You know how we get nervous sometimes? You go in a room where you don't need people, or you need to give a presentation, you know, speak in front of a group of people, or you need to do something and you get really nervous. What's at the root of being nervous? Why are we nervous? Why are we nervous? Because we're afraid that we'll make a mistake and look like an idiot. Isn't it? You know, it's completely, we're totally self-focused. We don't care about the other people. We just care about me. I don't want to look bad. Yeah? You know, I heard about a study that some psychologists did, and when they tabulated the results, more people were afraid of speaking in front of a group than they were afraid of dying. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, more people are afraid of speaking in front of a group. Why? Because they might look like an idiot. They're more afraid of looking like an idiot than they are of dying. Huh? Something's wrong. Okay? But, you know, all this incredible self-consciousness we have, lack of self-esteem, being too shy, being so angry, it all comes because we're just spinning around ourselves, thinking, I'm so important, everything should happen the way I want it to. Okay. So if we really look in our life, we see that the self-centered mind is the root of our suffering. Now, why is bodhicitta so beneficial? Because it's the thing that counteracts the self-centered mind. It's the total opposite of our self-preoccupied mind. Because with bodhicitta, that aspiration for enlightenment, for the benefit of all beings, we're completely focused on what is beneficial for all sentient beings. Of course it includes ourself, but we're only one sentient being. We're not the center of the universe. Okay? So by focusing our attention and on taking care of others, by having compassion for others, actually, we feel happier ourselves. Yeah? When we stop trying so hard to make things the way we want them to be, then we start accepting things how they are. We become much more content. We become much happier. Of course, we still try and improve society, but we're not doing it for our own benefit. We're doing it for the benefit of all beings. Okay? So our mind is happier because we have a much larger perspective and we're working for the benefit of all sentient beings. Okay? We're also happier when we generate bodhicitta because our heart is full of love for others. Whenever we see any other person, our instant reaction is, there's somebody who's lovable. There's somebody who's been kind to me. Okay. That's very different than how we look at people now when we're really self-centered, isn't it? What's our first thought now when we see somebody? Do they like me? Isn't that one of our first thoughts when we meet somebody? Do they like me? Am I safe around them? Are they going to be nice to me? Am I going to like them? Are they going to give me what I want? Am I going to talk them into thinking that I'm a good person? This is what our first thought is, okay? And we can see how that thought just breeds so much insecurity, so much lack of self-confidence. But when we drop that self-centered thought and instead turn our attitude to benefiting others, then our heart is so open and so joyful because whenever we see anybody, our thought is, here's a person who's kind. Here's a person who's lovable. And so instead of worrying about what they think of me and if I'm good enough, our focus is on how can I help this person? How can I lead them to enlightenment? How can I make their life easier? How can I make them happier? Okay? So our attention is totally focused on bringing long-term benefit to others. When our mind has that kind of intention, our mind is relaxed and it's peaceful and it's joyful. Okay? And we're not filled with self-doubt and self-confidence. Okay? In addition, when we have this bodhicitta mind that cherishes others, we have a very strong ability to go through difficulties. We don't get discouraged. We don't get depressed. Okay? We don't get overburdened when there's a problem and collapse because we're so distraught and we're so fearful. Okay? Bodhicitta makes the mind incredibly strong. Incredibly strong. Yeah? So that you're not afraid of the future and you're not afraid of anybody. Because your heart is so filled with love and compassion that there's no room for fear. Yeah? Think about it. When you really care about others, is there room for fear in your mind? Yeah? When you're genuinely focused with compassion on the welfare of others, you automatically don't feel afraid. Okay? Because your whole focus in life is different. Okay? So it gives you the ability to go through all sorts of problems. Okay? You look at His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Okay? Now, we all have problems in our life, don't we? Yeah. And we moan and groan about our problems. But are we a refugee? No. Okay. You look at the Dalai Lama. He became a refugee when he was 24 years old. Okay. He had to assume responsibility to lead his people when he was 15 years old. Now think back to when you were 15. Were you ready to be prime minister? I wasn't. Okay. Now you look at his life. He had to assume the responsibilities of something comparable to a prime minister when he was 15. When he was 24, he had to flee out of his country because the communists were trying to kill him. Okay. He hasn't been able to return to his country. And in the meantime, there's been genocide. Yeah. They dump nuclear waste and all kinds of toxic materials in the open spaces of Tibet. You know, and we think we have problems. Yeah, our problems are really kind of insignificant sometimes when we compare to the problems of other people and what they've gone through in their lives. You know, we've kind of, Singapore is such a peaceful country. People have enough to eat. You have very good social policies here. So there's not many people, or any people living on the street. But still, we manage to invent problems, don't we? Okay. When you have bodhicitta, then your mind doesn't invent problems. Because the mind is focused with love and compassion on caring about others. And so there's an incredible sense of contentment and peace within our own hearts. And then, even if we have problems, like you see even the Dalai Lama became a refugee, when you see him, is he walking around like this? Oh, I'm a refugee. I haven't been able to go back to my country. You know, he's not walking around like that. He's happy and he's joyful and he's not all angry about it. Well, that's by the power of great compassion and bodhicitta. Okay? So, the first chapter in this book talked about bodhicitta to really get us to see the benefits of cultivating love and compassion for all beings. And we do that by remembering the kindness of others, how people have been kind to us. Okay? And we can see the kindness of our family very easily, but to train our mind to see the kindness also of strangers, okay, of people that we don't know. So think today of how many people we have benefited from who we don't even know. Okay, just for example, we're sitting in Taipei Buddhist Center right now. Okay. This center was founded by Venerable Phat Quan and her long-term vision. She was an incredible Singaporean nun who I was privileged to meet, and I actually stayed at her temple, when I first came to Singapore in 1987. But she had a vision to build this, and so many people gave donations to build this center that we're sitting in right now. Okay. Do we know the people who built this? Do we know all the donors who supported her vision to build this center? Do we know the construction workers or the architect or the engineer or the plumber or the electrician? Okay. I don't think we know many of those people, do we? And yet, we're enjoying the fruits of all their labors because we just come in here this evening and here's this beautiful temple where we can sit down in a peaceful environment. Yeah, they made it especially with a good acoustic system so you can hear the teaching without any echoes. Yeah, And we benefited from so many people's thoughtfulness and so many people's mind, you know, care about us to build this place so that we could come and listen to teachings and create merit. And we don't even know those people, and yet look how much we've benefited from what they've done. Okay? You think about it. It's really incredible. Yeah. Think about all the food you ate today. Do you know the people who grew the rice that you ate? Yeah. Do you grow any rice in Singapore? I don't think so. It's all imported, isn't it? So here's all these people from other countries who grew the food that you ate today. Do you know any of them? You know, people who worked in the rice paddies? It's not easy working in a rice paddy. Yeah, it's hot, your back hurts. Yeah, the people who planted the rice, who harvested it, who prepared it. Yeah. I mean, just the food we eat, we don't even know where it came from anymore. And all the people involved in making it. Instead, we just have food and we think, oh, good, this is for me. But wait a minute. You know, it came due to the kindness of so, so many people who grew it. And these people are total strangers. And we wouldn't be alive if it weren't for their kindness and their effort. Yeah. So when we look like this and we see how many people are involved with just our staying alive, then we have a tremendous sense of gratitude for the kindness that we've experienced in our life. Okay? And when we see others as kind, then automatically they appear as lovable and beautiful to us. And when they appear as lovable, we're not afraid of them anymore. Okay? So I mentioned the prison work that I do in the U.S. I've also been to a prison in Singapore a couple of times, and I'll be going again on this visit. And sometimes people say to me, aren't you afraid to go into prisons? You know? And I go, no, why should I be afraid? You know, other people, oh, prisoners, oh, you know. And especially in the U.S., because we have much more crime in the U.S. than you have in Singapore. Your government, I think, is much wiser here, and they don't allow any of the citizens to have guns. In America, people can have guns, and it's the cause of a lot of problems. But the government doesn't want to change it. Anyway, I'm not afraid when I go into prisons. Why not? Why not? You know, well, because when I go in, those people are teaching me something, and I'm very grateful to them. And I have learned so much from the inmates that I would never ever have learned if I had not met them. Because how can I even explain it, what they teach me? They're people who can be very honest. Okay? At least the people who write to me, they're very honest. They're really seeking the Dharma. They actually want to practice. And what is very wonderful about them is they are ready to admit their faults. Okay? Most of us who are not inmates, we cover up our faults, don't we? Yeah. We make mistakes and we go, it wasn't me, it was him. Yeah? In our workplace, isn't it? We make a mistake and, oh no, it's not my fault, it's because so-and-so did that, so-and-so did that. You know, we're always kind of covering up for ourselves. The inmates that I work with, they're willing to look and be honest with themselves. And that's a quality I really appreciate. Okay. And so when I'm with them, I'm not afraid of them because they have that quality of being honest about the mistakes that they made. Okay? And they give me an opportunity to overcome my fear, because some of the people I work with have done the things that I am most afraid of. Okay? And yet, being a Buddhist and being a nun and having taken the Bodhisattva vows, you know, when you take the Bodhisattva vows, then you're committed to helping sentient beings. You can't just tune people out because they've done things that you're afraid of. Okay. But in getting to know them, they've really showed me how to overcome my fear of people and how to be very broad-minded and to learn that people make mistakes, but it doesn't mean that they're evil people. Yeah. And to learn that if I can forgive them for the mistakes that they've made, then also I can forgive myself for the mistakes I've made. And learning how to forgive ourselves is something very, very important to have a peaceful heart. Okay. So they've taught me all these kinds of things. So I can see them as lovable in that way and appreciate them as being kind. So, what I'm getting at, okay, is when we subdue our self-centered mind and turn our focus on others, we can see that we've benefited from everybody. We've benefited from the strangers who feed us and who give us shelter, who make our clothes. We even benefit from people who have harmed us or people who have done very negative actions, because they teach us things that we could never have learned otherwise. Okay? And even in your own life, we've all had people who have harmed us, right? But haven't we learned something very important from the harm that we've received? Yeah? Think about it. Would you be the same person now if you had not received the harm that you had received throughout your life? You know, sometimes when we go through difficulties, we learn about ourselves. We generate skills and find internal resources that we never could have found otherwise. And so when we see that, then we even have to say thank you to the people who have harmed us, because they've helped us become stronger through going through the difficulty. Okay. So when we train our mind to see the benefit that we've received from friends, from strangers, and even from people who have harmed us, then we discover that it's possible to generate love and compassion for everybody. And that when we generate love and compassion, not only do others benefit, but we also benefit. Okay?